Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Bob Costas is with us. And Bob, let me ask first and foremost, how are you coping? How are you managing during this most surreal time?
I'm okay. My family's okay. Thank heavens. Nothing to complain about relative to everybody else. Just fingers crossed, like everybody, that we come through this in at least better shape than the worst case scenarios. We know it's not going to be good. It's already bad to a certain extent, and we can only hope that with a little luck and with best efforts that it turns out to be less dire than what some have predicted.
Do you think, and Bob, do you think in any way, shape, or form we're ever going to return to whatever normal is?
Well, we hope so. We hope that a vaccine is discovered and that social distancing and other best practices mitigate this to a certain extent until a vaccine comes along. But I think that there will be changes in people's behavior. I don't mean this to be flippant. I've often wondered, and I never refused because you want to be polite, mm-hmm. I've often wondered why we have to shake hands. You know, you and I, out in public, a lot of strangers want to say hello, and I want to say hello too. We should be like Asians and just bow, right? What's the point? Even a fist bump seems like it's not the most prudent thing to do, and that would be even after a pandemic is behind us. Do we really need to do that? And I would think that in the aftermath of this, that we and governmental officials would be more alert to warnings, not crazed or irresponsible warnings, but warnings about the possibility of global pandemics. It wasn't as if, as we speak now, we're in the throes of this to this extent for a week or 10 days. Mm-hmm. And we know about it for maybe 3 weeks in the sense that it's in the public consciousness. But there were warnings about this months ago. Now, not every warning from every crackpot sector needs to be taken seriously. Mm-hmm. But as we look at this with a clear eye, and it has nothing to do with where you fall on the political spectrum, we look at this with a clear eye and we see that action could have been taken sooner. Would it have been action that would have kept us completely apart from the virus? Of course not. But action that could have made this scenario a whole lot better than it apparently is going to be.
You know, you bring up with the shaking of the hands, of course, in Russia, it's on the cheek. They kiss.
And, yeah, enough of that. Enough of that. Do you need a guy named Boris kissing you on both cheeks? I don't think so.
Let's, first of all, and we noticed today with Sean Payton, so the virus... a lot of NFL fans and a lot of people, I guess, with the NFL thought it might have been immune to the virus because the virus had taken care of baseball, it had taken care of the NBA and the NHL. Mm-hmm. And here was the NFL with its free agency, and it was giving us all something to talk about and all of what the NFL would want from their fans and with nothing else to distract, with no NBA, no NHL, and certainly no baseball for all of us to look forward to on the horizon. Here was the NFL having the entire toy department to itself, and then here's Sean Payton. And you probably know The NHL had its first player that we know of test positive. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, a player from the Ottawa Senators, the team did not reveal his name, but now just about every sport has been way too familiar with this virus.
Yeah, and getting back to your original point, the NFL might have thought that in a certain sense, they lucked out. Super Bowl behind it.
Sure.
A lot of off-season talk, which always takes place even under normal circumstances with free agency and speculation about how teams are going to be made up and whatnot. And they thought that perhaps all of this would pass in time for them to play a regular and uninterrupted season. So now, apart from whoever might wind up being infected in the football world, you have to consider this, and I am not posing as an expert. There are plenty of experts in the newspapers, online, and on television, and I am not one of them. But from what I've been able to glean, it isn't certain that this thing has a discernible endpoint, whether it's 3 months from now or 6 months from now, that we're able to say, that's it, it's over with. It may ebb and flow. It may subside to a significant extent and then surge again. So who's to say that doesn't happen at some point on the calendar that would be part of the football season?
Yeah.
So who's to say that baseball decides, with the consultation of responsible people, decides that they can resume their season or begin their season on July 1st, to pick a date? Who's to say that they're in the clear from July all the way through early November, which they probably have to go to complete the playoffs and World Series? They just have to cross their fingers that it plays out that way.
Yeah, well, there's no question. And again, I mean, are we going to get a vaccine soon enough? I mean, I've heard, and again, you're hoping that what information you're getting is close to being somewhat accurate, because let's face it, over the last couple of weeks, so much misinformation has been thrown about and creating a lot of anxiety and a lot of panic and so forth and so on, as you know. But you wonder whether there is going to be a vaccine. I've heard that if there is going to be a vaccine, it might take as long as a year and a half. And then everybody from A to Z within the medical community is going to have to try and come up with some kind of treatment. And what is so disturbing and so frightening and so horrific is that you may be a carrier without showing any signs or symptoms of the disease.
Yes, from what we've been able to understand as lay people, it's best to act as if you might yourself be infected, even if you're showing no symptoms, not only to be vigilant for your own sake, but to be a good and empathetic citizen. You don't want to place other people in jeopardy.
Do you think enough people are taking this seriously?
By now, I think most are, but it's still alarming how many are not. You know, you see young people partying on the beaches, although I guess Florida closed it down today, saying, I don't care, I'm young, nothing's going to happen to me, without appreciating the fact that even if nothing happens directly to them, they could spread the disease. That's possible. And then you still have some people who get all their information from certain corners of Facebook or from certain ideological media, and those people insist that this is overblown for political reasons. Now, it's one thing to be uninformed. It's another thing to be angrily misinformed, and especially when some of that misinformation, at least in the initial stages, came from the very place where, in a crisis, a nation looks for credible information and honest reassurance.
We're talking with Bob Costas, and what we are hearing so far with Bob is reason and sensibility and smart, and it's something that all of us should pay attention to. That's for sure. You know, there's been an issue with the NBA and having players tested before John Q. Public is being tested, and then this is. And give me your thoughts on this.
You know, I don't think I can offer a credible take on that. I understand the question being raised. I don't understand what the answer to that question is. I just don't know if there was anything untoward about this or any special advantage taken. It's certainly possible, and it's certainly a legitimate question, but it would be irresponsible to say that I know the answer.
Yeah, and see, and again, in sports talk radio, we offer an opinion. Mine is that certainly anyone, regardless of age, regardless of finance, regardless of occupation, race, color, creed, religion, you name it, if somebody needs attention medically, without question, it should be available to them. I'm not really upset, Bob, between you, me, and the lamppost about athletes being tested because of the traveling they do and their interaction with the public. It's a little bit different for those who are not the celebrity. And, of course, there are some people very upset, and I don't think really, I think your answer is really closer to what should be than not, because what is important is that anybody and everybody who needs to be tested gets tested, that's for sure, and gets the proper and attention medically that they need. Now, bottom line is, I don't mind if a professional athlete, whether they're playing or not, as is the case with the NBA, it doesn't matter. I'm glad that they are getting tested because of their interaction, as I say, and as you know, with the public, even if they're not playing, and all the traveling they do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's part of the issue here. You'll recall that when the two Jazz players were had tested positive, immediately the thought was, it wasn't just the players from the Thunder who they would have played that night.
Right.
What teams did they play in the preceding 10 days to 2 weeks? And there were five or six of those teams, not to mention the people who work in the locker rooms and the officials and the people close to courtside, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's an exponential number beyond the players themselves.
Oh, sure. And the New York Knickerbockers, by the way, one of those teams that had taken on the Utah Jazz. And here's the, another thing, I mean, we have with the NHL, I mean, they're going to be allowed, from what I understand, Gary Bettman has let each team know that they can go back home to Europe, where, of course, as we know, there are a number of people who are from Europe who cannot come into the United States.
Yeah.
But the NHL player from Europe, elsewhere outside the United States, they're going to be allowed to go home.
And I think as you balance the legitimate concerns, you still have to let people go home. But what may be the case, I'm not an expert in this by any means, as I keep saying, but what may be the case is that those people will have to be monitored when they re-enter or before they re-enter to make sure that they're not carrying anything when they come back across our borders.
You know, Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball, I saw this the other day, where $30 million, I believe, if that's even enough money, but the gesture is there, at least the first $30 million has been put on the table to help those people who work at ballparks, who are out of work.
Yeah, I think that's great.
I do, too.
We've seen players do that, apart from the league itself. We've seen NBA players do it. Mm-hmm. Mark Cuban has stepped up. When things like this happen, and I'm not saying it's directly analogous, but think of 9/11 and other circumstances, some of the very best in people, some of the very best in our country comes forward in a very dramatic way.
And yet, and so as much as we can salute Rob Manfred and the other leagues as well for doing what they can do to help those who are out of work and not collecting any kind of a paycheck at all, and here's the interesting thing with Manfred. Because of the virus, we're not talking about the Houston Astros, but we sure would like to know when a decision, when a penalty, when some punishment is going to be coming down with the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, because based on what they had said previously, it certainly was going to come down before the end of spring training. And right now we're not at exactly where the end of spring training would be. The first games were to be played on March 26th, but certainly we expected it by a couple of weeks ago. And obviously all of that and more becomes a footnote in light of what the nation is dealing with. But you're right. It's kind of curious. I'm sure the investigation is now over. They've gathered the facts. So we're awaiting the decision, which may in the immediate future be moot, because there may be no games for anybody to be suspended from until they resume. But right. eventually they're going to have to decide.
And what give me your sense, we're on baseball a little bit. Give me your thoughts about what Manfred would like to do with the postseason and some of the new rules that we are going to see whenever we do get to the season that is supposed to be 2020.
Yeah, let's start with the postseason.
Okay.
In the immediate aftermath of the story that Joel Sherman broke in the New York Post, I was asked about it, and I said, look, I'm not antagonistic to ideas to modernize the game and to expand the playoffs. They're on the table, and they should be discussed. You know, because you've been around this a long time, every writer will tell you, hey, I don't write the headline. The headline, at least in the online edition of the New York Post, was executives and Bob Costas salivating over new playoff format. Like, I was the person who thought it up, and I'm at the head of a parade waving a banner for it. No, all I said was, hey, this may be a first draft. Let's talk about it. And if we're going to talk about it, and in this case, we got nothing but time, because other than pulling stuff out of the archives, there are no games. If we're going to talk about it, as unimportant as it seems, A, because it's a couple years down the road in any case, and sure. B, because we're dealing with a national and international crisis, but if we're going to talk about it, the first premise has to be this. Very often, whether it's baseball or any other walk of life, we look at what we don't have and think that that's important enough to jeopardize what we do have. Let's put this in perspective. Yes, baseball has some problems with pace of play and with its connection, generally speaking, with younger audiences. It has an issue with that. On the other hand, look at how baseball's revenues haven't just grown, but have exploded over the past couple of decades. Where's the money coming from to sign Garrett Cole and all these other people? All right. The game in many ways is thriving. Yes, attendance has been down over the last few years, but down from very high levels. You and I are old enough to remember during the so-called golden age of baseball, and in many ways it was a romantic time that we remember fondly, but teams would brag about drawing a million, and only the Dodgers or the post-war Cleveland Indians in the late 40s ever drew 2 million. Now it's routine for teams to draw 2 million. The Cardinals in a mid-level market draw 3 million plus every year. And when you look at the ratings, local ratings, yes, baseball has a problem on national television relative to the time when the game of the week was on NBC and when World Series games routinely outrated NFL games and all the rest. Yes, it's down from that. But during the summertime, local games, the St. Louis Cardinals, the Philadelphia Phillies, the Seattle Mariners, if they're any good, very often are the highest rated things of the entire summer in their local or regional markets. And those regional networks pump millions upon millions of dollars into baseball's coffers. And one of the reasons that attendance is down isn't just because people don't want to sit at the ballpark for a 3.5 hour game or pay very high prices, because clearly many of them do when teams easily clear 2 million a year in attendance. Part of the reason is because there's so much baseball you can watch in the comfort of your home, not just your own team, but the MLB network, the highlights on ESPN. If you really love baseball, you spend less than it might cost to take a family of four to a single game to get a package that lets you watch every game in the league for the entire season, which is another source of revenue for baseball. So interest in baseball can be measured in many ways, and nothing can compare with King football, which is a television sports and cultural juggernaut. But apart from that, baseball overall, yes, is it as culturally hip as the NBA? It is not. But overall, baseball is in a stronger position than any other sport, even if it has issues, and all sports face issues and challenges. Now, with that long preamble, Let's say that you're going to reach for something you don't have. You envision a day in baseball, which is, according to this plan, what they envision, where it's going to be equivalent to Selection Sunday in the NCAA. And they're going to say, okay, this team that won the American League Central but doesn't get a bye draws this team. If they want to, they get to pick who they're going to play, blah, blah, blah. That's one day, and those teams are all already in. That's not comparable to a camera at every campus and players and students exploding when they find out that their bubble team got in, or when Stanford finds out that they avoided Duke in the first regional and they get a reasonably good draw. It's not going to be like that. And if you're going to expand the playoffs in the way that it was first discussed, okay, you have to consider what the long season in baseball means. And I'm going on at this length because I just assume, Steve, that we have the time.
We do.
Given the circumstances. You stop me when we don't.
No,
get out for a commercial in the middle of this.
A stream of consciousness here, Bob. Please continue.
But I believe it's coherent as opposed to just a stream of consciousness. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Okay. When baseball instituted the first wild card, I opposed it, and shallow thinkers said, oh, that's just because he's a traditionalist. No. When baseball went from one league to two divisions per league, they went, in effect, from two pennant races to four pennant races. Divisional play had all of the qualities of a regular pennant race. When you added a wild card, you diminished and distorted many of those qualities, and much of the drama when the two best teams in the league, if they were in the same division, or a team that was at least good enough to be the wild card, even if it wasn't the second best team in the whole league, when they came to the wire, it didn't mean anything in many cases. And what should have been the most dramatic games of the whole year were played with the same urgency as a game in early May. On top of that, there was also so little difference between the division winner, maybe the best team in the league, and a wild card, that it didn't really matter that much. If one team was 15 games better than the other, they started from scratch, maybe in a best of five crapshoot in the first round. So I opposed that on logic, on a logical basis. But when they added a second wild card, I not only approved of it, I applauded it because it created the second wild card, which is good because more teams and their fan bases are involved, but it also eliminated much of that problem. It made a clear distinction between finishing first and having to settle for a wild card. Nobody wanted to subject themselves to that one game crapshoot. Okay, now think of what they've now proposed. They've proposed three division winners, yes, but only one, the one with the best record, would be exempt from the first round best two out of three. Last year, as you know, Steve, in the American League, three teams won more than 100 games. Two of those three teams would then have to find themselves in a best two out of three crapshoot. And yes, the better teams would get all three at home under this proposal. But how often during the course of any baseball season does a team that winds up winning the pennant lose two out of three at home to a team that finishes under 500? It happens all the time because this isn't football. It isn't basketball. It's baseball, where the best team wins roughly 60% of its games and the worst team wins roughly 40% of its games. And the difference plays out over the course of a long season. Does that really make sense? And if you're going to do that and diminish the meaning of regular season for what little juice you would gain from this selection day and from the additional playoff games, you've got to be ready to absorb the downside, which is that many people will view the regular season as having less meaning and less drama. And here's the last point. I promise it's the last point, and it's this. If you're going to go with that format, then it only makes sense in fairness to play a balanced schedule because the divisions wouldn't mean that much. So if you're going to play a balanced schedule, is it going to be a plus that there are fewer Yankee-Red Sox games, fewer Cardinal-Cub games, fewer Giant-Dodger games? Be careful of the unintended consequences. Baseball may envision that all the positives reside in this brief period of time at the end of the year. But the distortion and unfairness that may result during the course of the long season is something else that they have to take into consideration.
Bob, you realize that if Rob Manfred was listening to you as eloquently so as you have just been with this kind of discussion, he would be smiling from ear to ear because you are not anymore talking about the Houston Astros and all the cheating.
Yeah. And also, I hope, as has always been the case, going all the way back to the 80s and 90s, whatever observation I have, I don't think anybody can say he doesn't like baseball. I love baseball. You know, I want to see it thrive. I want to see it be the best it can be. And I'm not saying I don't want to see it change. But if it changes, it ought to change in an enlightened and carefully considered way.
Everybody wants to bring up about the speed of the game. My thought is just higher. Just draft faster players. But I think it's a little bit more than that. But everybody does talk about the length of games, the speed of the game. It's a little bit too slow, especially for the younger generation. And also what we do get, and I wonder how you would think about how long we are going to have that three-batter minimum for a relief pitcher.
Until we get to the World Series in a one-run game, the championship on the line, and somebody is stuck, some manager is stuck, the pitcher comes in, and the first guy doubles off the wall, the next guy singles him home, now the tying runs at first, the go-ahead run comes to the plate, but we can't take him out just yet.
Right.
Yeah, I think you're going to see some feigned injuries in some situations, or maybe even the occasional, what in the world is this intentional walk, just to get the faltering pitcher out of there.
Yeah, and as we speak locally here in New York, of course, everybody was beginning to think, well, before the virus, that both Stanton and Judge were not going to be available opening day. They might be if we ever do get to an opening day. And as far as the New York Metropolitans are concerned, do you think in our lifetime, Bob Costas, we're going to see the Wilpon sell?
Well, in our lifetime. We ain't getting any younger, Steve. But in the lifetime of many of your listeners, yes. You know, I'm reminded of a great line that Whitey Herzog had when he was managing the Cardinals. And Gussie Bush, the then probably 85-year-old owner, beloved in St. Louis, from the Anheuser-Busch family and owner of the Cardinals, passionate baseball fan. And after the Cardinals won the pennant in the World Series in 82, he called Whitey to his home at Grant's Farm in St. Louis, and he said, Whitey, I want to sign you to a lifetime contract. And Herzog said, Gussie, my lifetime or yours?
Let me ask you about the CBA. Why, I think, what was it about, with the football, 500 didn't vote with this new CBA with the NFL. 500, Bob, that's a lot. I mean,
and among those who did vote, it was close to 50-50, barely more than half approved.
Yeah. You like what's transpired with football?
I haven't looked at it closely enough. I'm kind of detached from football. I watch the playoffs and I admire, you know, you can't help but admire and be attracted to the play of someone like Patrick Mahomes. And I've always admired the sacrifice, the athletic ability, the shared experience, the drama. But as you may know, I've had ambivalent feelings about football for a while. So I hardly watch any regular season football. I do follow the playoffs, and I am still interested in my broadcasting colleagues. I still watch Al and Chris and whatnot, and Jim Nance and Mike Tirico and Joe Buck, and I appreciate what they do, but I can't honestly say that I'm up on everything that's going on around the league on a day-to-day basis.
In a way, I'm a little bit surprised hearing that, because after all, as you and I are the biggest baseball fans, that's my favorite sport, as is with you, and yet the NFL, with the head held up high and the strut and with the shoulders back, and they're going to tell us that, hey, you guys, Major League Baseball, no longer the national pastime. It is us, the NFL, and you're telling me you don't pay that much attention.
No, I don't. I don't. It just doesn't move the needle for me. That doesn't mean anybody else is wrong.
Right.
You know, I've never gone to the opera. which is, I guess, the opposite pretty much of the NFL. I've never gone to the opera. I probably should. I don't mock those who do. It's just not on my radar. It just doesn't do it for me. So, you know, so that's the way it is. But I'll tell you this, as just one example of how the NFL rules overall, and I really find this, as a guy who cares about baseball, I find this annoying. When Game 7 of an LCS is relegated to FS1 instead of being on Big Fox, as they call it, and a regular season Pac-12 football game is on at the same time on Big Fox, many people don't even know where FS1 is, or they can't find it, or isn't available if they're in a hotel. This is the game that's going to decide who goes to the World Series.
Sure.
And then during the World Series, Joe Buck, who obviously shows how versatile and capable he is by being able to switch back and forth in the same week, often consecutive days, between baseball and football. But during the World Series, Thursdays are off days, he's going off to do a Thursday night football game and then returning to the World Series. Okay, and during the Division Series, I believe, he went to do a Thursday night game when the Yankees and Twins were playing. And so Joe Davis, who's also quite good, had to come in and do that game. What sort of message does that send about baseball? That our premier events take a back seat to regular season games that even football fans aren't going to remember by next week. And I'll give you an example of this, okay?
Okay.
We've already stipulated that I love baseball. I was in Detroit, I guess it was 2013, doing a Major League Baseball showcase game on the MLBN network with John Smoltz. I'm in Detroit, and the Spurs and the Heat are playing Game 7 of their NBA final. And all I'm thinking is, please don't let this game go to extra innings. Please let this game be over quickly so I can get back to the hotel to watch Game 7. Now, I like basketball, but I like baseball even more. But who in their right mind thinks that any regular season baseball game in June is more important than the NBA Finals? Look at it this way. If I was doing the World Series on NBC, no, I'll take it back. This is the better example. If the NBA were still on NBC, so now it's June and it's the NBA Finals, but the baseball game of the week was still on NBC. And as you know, there were often two or three days between games in the NBA Finals. And so they said to me, Bob, why don't you and Tony Kubek just show up at Wrigley Field and do the Saturday afternoon game, and then on Sunday you can be back in, you know, can be in Seattle or Houston or wherever Game 5 of the NBA Finals is. I think even at that stage of my career, I would have said, are you nuts? That sends a terrible message. That just sends the wrong message. As soon as the NBA Finals are over, I'll be back happily doing baseball. And during the World Series, I won't leave to do a football game for you either.
This is Bob Costas Unplugged.
Yep. What do I have to lose at this point, Steve?
Are we going to have an Olympics?
They keep saying they are. Now, let's think about this. It's coming up now. It's not that far away. Here's a good idea. Let's have the single largest gathering, international gathering, on the planet. Let's invite more than 10,000 athletes and millions more when you count spectators and support personnel and people in the delegations and television personnel and media. Let's invite them from all four corners of the globe. And if we can find an athlete from Antarctica, let's invite him or her too, so that every continent is covered. And all of them come from, they come from nations with varying healthcare systems and everything else. Let's bring them all together and let's have them, you know, sweat all over each other and wrestle each other and share facilities. And you know what a bacchanal the Olympic Village becomes, especially after competitors are done with their particular events. I think it's a fine idea. If you want to put the lid on a global pandemic, this is the best possible way to do it. Don't you think, Steve?
Absolutely. Who would disagree?
To this point, perhaps the IOC. But maybe they'll come to their senses in time.
Bob, I hope we have a baseball season. Certainly everybody here, as you can imagine, in New York, biting at the bit. And there's only so much you could talk about regarding the NFL with free agency. And again, the most important thing, and it's on everybody's mind, it seems that, that more sooner than later, we all wish and hope and pray that this virus is contained and or eliminated so that we could get back to whatever normal is. I will just say this. I think our audience here is going to be fully interested in, as we previously advertised when we were on before the 1979. Right now, the station is broadcasting the 1979, rebroadcasting the 1979 NCAA championship game with Michigan State and Indiana, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, and we will be on, you and I, and I think the audience is going to be thoroughly entertained by the
hope so.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And especially with what you had to say about baseball, I cannot thank you enough for giving us as much time as you have. And we both have the time, that's for sure. But you know how much I appreciate you giving us the time you gave us.
Steve, always a pleasure to be schmoozing with you.
That means a lot, having you on with us, that's for sure. Do take care of yourself. Stay healthy. Stay safe. You, your family, your friends, everybody that you care about, and even those you don't care about. we hope all is going to be okay more sooner than later. Thanks so much, Bob.
There you go, Steve. Be well. Thanks.
You bet.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.